Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Pitchcraft Season 2. We're in conversation with Harshal Mathur, the co-founder of Razorpay, one of India's leading fintechs. Harshal, thank you very much for talking to us on Pitchcraft. And what we have here is the very first pitch deck of Razorpay. Hope this rings a bell, Harshal, because you've come so far from this. This was April 2015, just an idea then, and now you've evolved to this full stack fintech company in 2025. But, you know, take a trip down memory lane. Tell us about what it was like then creating this pitch deck, the problem that you and your co-founder Shashank were trying to solve, because you were just out of IIT Roorkee. He was a year senior to you. And both of you all decided to attack this very unsexy space, the payment gateway space. How did that happen?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, thanks for bringing this up. It's it evokes a lot of memories and it takes us down the memory lane. I think about both me and Shashank, right? Like, we never really started Razorpay by thinking that, hey, we need to do a startup and let's find an idea. And that's why we didn't think of like the standard consumer stuff like that. Hey, let's build something in e-com and so on. I think both of us were in our, like, just graduated from college, both of us in our jobs, in an MNC jobs. And we ran into this problem very naturally. We just came across that, hey, we were doing something on the side and we wanted to accept payments. And we saw that it's very painful to accept payments in India, digital payments in India. We spoke to a lot of startup founders and other business builders. And everyone said it's easier to accept cash in India than to accept digital payments. And that, like, logically didn't make sense to us. So so that's how we just went into starting and building Razorpay. And we created this pitch deck in 2015, I think almost 8-10 months since we've been working on this. And it's a very simple, I mean, I'm slightly embarrassed by it. It's a very
No, but it's a nice, easy to navigate deck. No, yeah, it's extremely simple fancy
deck.
Stuff.
Yeah, the core idea was, let's just put down why we are building what we're building. What is the problem statement? What are we solving? And how big could this be? Like, those are the three big areas. And I think the biggest time we would spend on this deck, which is the first or second slide, which talks about like the problem statement in India. Like, majority of the time was spent there. That the sign-up process is slow, the activation takes a very long time. But more importantly, the failure rate of online payments in India was very, very high. And that was the core.
So this was the problem slide.
Problem
you were trying to solve.
Yes. And if you look at the bottom of this, that was our core landing point, because we were mostly pitching to US investors and so on, that the state of payments in India was like US 20 years back. And this is pre-UPI. If you ask me today, I think
UPI came a year later.
A year later. If you ask me today, this statement has flipped on its head. And I think India is far ahead of US now in terms of how payments and payment system
USA operates. Is behind.
Behind India. So it's amazing to see that this statement has flipped back in 10 years.
And you're also flipping back.
Yes.
But Harshal, was it very important to you to sort of mention the high failure rates? You know, because you were launching a payment gateway at a time when there were already payment gateways in the market. I mean, BillDesk was around, CC Avenue was around, Citrus was around. Why would a VC invest in the fifth payment gateway or the sixth payment gateway startup?
By the way, that's the most common thing we would hear when we pitch to investors. Most investors...
Was that the number one reason you were getting rejected?
Yeah. Most investors just say, hey, payment gateway is a done market. It's commoditized. There are so many players. It's all a pricing game and there's no money to be made here. What's the point of a fifth gateway and CCA? And see, payment gateway is a very nuanced and specific domain. Like, not everyone faces it on a day-to-day basis. So if you ask an average person, they'll be like, yeah, it's done and dusted. Right? Like, when we spoke about success rates and stuff, most VCs wouldn't even understand what success rates are and how important it is and how failures are a problem. The only people who understood our problem really well was founders. And that's why if you look at our first fundraising, except for Z47, we only got like a bunch of founders invested in us. And we had almost 33 angel investors because founders really related with it. We went and spoke to so many founders that, hey, like InMobi founders and so many others that, hey, this is what we're solving. And everyone said, yes, this is a big problem we faced when we were starting our company. This is a payments is a big problem that we faced when we starting to build our problems, and it's still a problem that we need to solve. So it was easier to raise money from founders. It was very hard to raise money from VCs.
Z47, which was then Matrix.
Matrix, yeah.
Right. But, you know, that brings me to my next question. So you said the last line in this slide, you mentioned that, you know, like it was in the USA 20 years ago because you were targeting US investors. And you were one of the first to sort of get absorbed by Y Combinator then. So this deck, was it made with Indian investors or US investors?
I mean, this is the only deck we had. There is Indian investors or US investors. Hmm. But we had built it in a way that even US investors could understand, because at that point of time, there were limited Indian investors, a lot of US investors. So we built it in a way that, like, anyone who doesn't understand India can also relate to it. That's why it talks very deeply about the problems in India, how India is very different as a market and so on. And then we go deep into what are we solving for.
Right. And who worked on the deck? Was it you? Was it Shashank? Was it
both
some
of us.
Other guy?
There was no other guy. Just both of us. We sat down. We had some folks working with us part-time at that point. So they helped us source some data and stuff. But it was just both of us sitting down, putting whatever we felt right onto a slideshow and then presenting it. So there's no design on it. There's not a lot of cool elements into it. It's very simple. Just showing what we're building, how much traction we have had, and where can it be.
How long did it take for you to put this deck together?
It took time. It took a lot of effort to refine it. So maybe 1-2 months.
And did you get any advice from your batchmates at IIT Roorkee who had perhaps raised VC funding ki deck ko aise banana chahiye, or, you know, it should have these elements?
Yeah, we have just general advice in terms of how, I mean, we read on.
Or you refer to some online template.
A lot of
template.
Online stuff on how deck should be. We were part of YC at that point of time. So YC had some bit of they had some internal guidelines on how should your basic pitch deck look like. And that's why it's built in that way. So later people told us that, hey, you should put a founder slide and talk about.
I noticed it's one of the very few decks that doesn't have a about the founders.
Yeah,
slide.
So then people told us, hey, you should put that you are from IIT and so on. I said, we didn't know that all of that is important. So we focused on the problem statement and what we are solving. That's it.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned that it was very hard for you to raise money from investors. It was easier for you to raise money from founders. Tell us about the rejections. I think in a previous interview, you told us that, you know, there were like tens of rejections, or I don't know, more than 50 rejections. Talk us through that.
Yes, sir.
And what kept you going during that time?
Yeah, so we haven't formally pitched to VCs ever, but we would go into like investor meetups and events, right? So I know we were in Jaipur at that point of time. We went to an investor, an industry event that was happening in Jaipur, and we did this. There's a concept called investor speed dating, where you would meet every investor for 5 minutes and tell. And we had 5 investor meetings, and all of them said, hey, this is not an interesting area. Like, why are you guys building in this space? It's a commoditized space. So, I mean, all 5 of them rejected us, honestly. So,
and what did you feel like after that? I should have worked at Schlumberger. Shashank should have worked at Microsoft.
It was definitely discouraging. We went back and thought that, did we not put our thing right? Did we not explain it better? Because, see, we never questioned that we are in the wrong space, because on the other side, we were speaking to people who are going to use us. Founders, startups, and others.
And you always found validation.
And we found
customers.
Validation there with that base. I remember, so when we were writing the YC application, one of the first founders we reached out to was Archit at ClearTax, because they were the first YC, India-focused YC company before us. And I reached out to him and he said, this is amazing. And whenever you guys are ready, let me know. I would love to use it. Because he told us the stories of how he has faced so much problems with getting payments into ClearTax. He didn't get approval. It took us 6 months to take live, and he was facing a lot of issues. So those conversations kept adding to us. Every founder that we spoke to said that, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. I remember we met the founder of Stayzilla at that point of time. And he said, yeah, this is such a common problem. We faced it ourselves. We met Kunal Shah, who said, I have faced this. I have looked at this problem very
and
closely.
And he was one of your investors.
One of our angel investors. So that side of the... And we said, this is our core customer base, not VCs, right? Like, so if this segment loves us, then we are on the right track. Maybe we are not presenting it right. So we still were looking at ourselves and... How do we present it in a way that it's more understandable? Because, as I said, payment gateway is a very niche domain. Not everyone is well-versed with it. Not everyone is well-versed with the problems here. So we kept thinking we are doing something wrong in the way we are pitching it out.
And what role did the pitch deck play for you, Harshal? Did it play a crucial role in finally landing that investment? Did it help you get more clarity of thought on, you know, what problem you wanted to solve, that you finally had it down pat? That, you know, this is the problem, this is the solution, and this is the future.
See, I think from an investment perspective, and from an investor can comment better on itself.
We are going to have an investor of yours,
but from my perspective, I think the way I look at pitch deck is it's an accompaniment, like it's something that goes along with the conversation that you're doing, and it's what you leave people with. So generally, the conversation with investors would be more about me telling what we're doing and just referring the pitch deck a bit. But it's what you leave them with. So if you meet an investor, you leave them with the pitch deck. And when they want to go back to your story, understand what you said, or maybe understand something better, then they look at it. So it's very important from that perspective, because it's the final message that they leave with beyond the conversation that they have. So I'll say the highest priority is the conversation you have with the investor, but the second most important thing is the pitch deck. From our perspective, I think the building the pitch deck itself was added a lot of value, because it allowed us to really channel our thoughts on why we are building what we're building and put it down into, let's say, 5 points or 7 points or 10 bullet points. And I think that really helped us drill down the core messaging. So when I said that the first meetings that I had, we didn't really have a pitch deck. Sometimes you're all over the place. You're saying, hey, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. And sometimes you'll get too caught up in one specific thing which is not as relevant. Putting a pitch deck helps you refine your thoughts and say, this is the most important message I want to leave anyone who hears about Razorpay with. This is the most important thing that I want them to remember. And that's why like these statements, like the state of payments in India is like US was 20 years back. That is an important statement that we wanted them to leave with, because not everyone will understand success rate, not everyone will understand long activation times and so on. But if I can just leave that message with them that, hey, we are 20 years behind US when it comes to digital payments, and this is what we're here to solve. I think that the pitch deck helped us refine those messages really well.
You know, what were the one or two assumptions in the deck 10 years ago that you got wrong or that you got right?
Oh yeah, the most important one is the market size. I think there's a slide on this on
India's growth story.
And I remember when we used pitch, I would tell people that the market size of payment market volumes is $60 billion. And we said it's growing really rapidly. So it's $60 billion, it could be $200 billion in the next 4 years. And we'll feel like $200 billion sounds really big. Today, Razorpay alone does $180 billion. And the market size is somewhere in $500 to $600 billion range. So I think the market size is in India is something that's very hard to get right. And of course, as we spoke earlier, UPI came a year later. It just completely changed the trajectory of digital payments in India. And the graph that I showed on how electronic payments are growing, I think if I superimpose the current growth path of UPI on top of it, this will look like a small error in that graph. That the pace at which digital payments grew is beyond what we could have imagined when we created this deck.
Right. And if a founder had to make a B2B fintech or PG deck today, what should they have and what shouldn't they have?
I think today things, the core concept remains the same. You will talk about what is it that you're solving? What is it that you're going to do that's going to be really different than the market? I think the good part today is you don't have to explain market size to anyone. The market size is really large. So I think we had to spend a lot of time actually explaining market size. Because people will say $60 billion in a payment business, which is a small margin business, means a very small amount of revenue. So the revenue pool seemed very small to a lot of US investors. It said, we don't expect a large company can be built in this space. Of course, that changed. So at least today, that part is not true anymore. The market size is really large. What you have to explain now, what if you are building something like this, you would have to explain a lot on how you're going to be different than what already exists. Or what is a problem that you're solving that is not being solved by other players. And it's very nuanced in this space. For example, our core, if you look at this deck, the core thing that we were trying to explain to people is that we're building with a product and tech first mindset. And that would allow us to constantly differentiate than anyone else. So the delta was not one feature or one thing. It was this approach that we're taking, that we're going to use product and tech as a differentiator and solve for success rates. Now that is a very nuanced difference, and it was very hard for a lot of investors to grasp.
And when you pitched, you already had banking partners, you were already servicing merchants.
Yeah,
was it easier because you had like a proof
Those
of concept,
proof
a working business model?
Yeah, see, one of the hardest problems in building online payments is getting the approvals and certifications. So we wanted to cross that threshold before we started raising any money. So we didn't,
That's why you talk about the PCI DSS certification.
Getting those certifications, getting those bank partners. So we didn't start pitching to any investors till we had that sorted. Because we can't go to an investor and say, hey, we want to do this, but we are not yet approved. We can't even take a customer live. So we started doing this only when we had been live for almost 4 weeks.
Today that you will absolutely not put in this pitch deck, what would it be?
I don't know. A lot of stuff.
Or a slide that you would have.
I think a slide that I would have on this today. I would like to, in today, if I were building something like this, I'd like to add some way on how we are leveraging AI to build different. I think, of course, that as a concept didn't exist. How, of course, UPI is something, if I knew at that point was coming, I would love to add how UPI is going to change the game. But I remember in 2015, the draft consultation paper on UPI had come out. So I had read that before the pitch deck, but it was a draft. So we didn't know if it will actually be a reality.
Right. And Harshal, you know, you're an active angel investor yourself. How much importance do you attach to pitch decks today? Do you go through it, or is it more, did this person work at Razorpay? Did that person work, study at IIT Roorkee? Is it based on those relationships, the deals that you see?
You can see from our deck that it probably doesn't matter as much. I think the pitch deck, I mean, of course, the founder conversation is the most important thing. The first thing is
founder
the conversation.
Is the first filter.
Yeah, because like I can't decide to invest or not invest just basis of pitch deck. So pitch deck is what you are left with. So once you have the conversation, after that, you want to go back and you're meeting, deciding that, hey, do you really want to do this? Then you go back to the pitch deck and it helps you remind you of the founder conversation. So I'll say founder conversation is the most important thing, but pitch deck is the second close most important thing after that.
Right. On that note, you heard out from Harshal, but now let's hear out from the investor who actually decided to back him very early in the journey. Vikram Vaidyanathan of Z47 will be joining us on the second segment. Welcome back. We're in conversation with Harshal and Vikram Vaidyanathan of Z47, which previously was Matrix Partners, one of India's leading VC funds and one of the first to back Razorpay. Vikram, before this, I'm sure you were listening to Harshal. He told us about how he went through so many rejections from investors, because every investor would tell him, you know, what is left to make in payment gateway, it's done and dusted. So he had more luck raising from founders, which is why I think you had, 35 angels? It was very difficult for us to process what are so many angels doing in one startup. But he said it was easier to convince founders than investors. But then you found something in Razorpay which other investors didn't. What did you find and why did you go ahead?
Yeah, I'm very glad he got all those rejections, because then this partnership happened.
It
set this partnership up, which has been honestly one of the most rewarding partnerships both ways for us. I think one is the pitch, but also the investor has to be ready to hear that pitch. I think for us, we were looking to make an investment in the payment gateway space. And I overheard your conversation where, you know, Harshal was saying that most people thought that the payment gateway space is done, that there are enough payment gateways. Why do you need one more? And for us, we were convinced that we needed one more. And if you look at the clarity in the pitch deck, it essentially says there is failure rates, mobile is coming, and we have a product tech approach. And honestly, that was our thesis, which was essentially that failure, somebody is going to come and solve these failure rates, because without that, the e-commerce market cannot be real, cannot grow. And it has to be mobile first. There was this, you know, famous Mary Meeker chart on mobile internet crossing PC internet in India, and that had happened. So it had to be mobile first. It had to solve for failure rates, and it could only be solved by somebody who was looking at it as a product tech problem and not a financial services problem. And as soon as we met them, it was essentially those three things hitting us in our face. And so it was a very easy decision. And honestly, I'm glad it was such an easy decision, because we had to make it on Skype. And because these guys were at Y Combinator, we were in India, and we had tracked them just before they left from Jaipur to Y Combinator. So the conversation was happening while they were through Y Combinator, but suddenly the demo day was on them and us, and we had to make a decision before demo day. YC demo day.
Because the competition would increase after demo day, there would be more investors.
And there was, there was a valuation cap and all of that was playing into it. And we were very excited. So we wanted to commit. And so it was the first decision that we ever made on Skype at that time. I know through COVID, it became more normal to make these decisions on Zoom, but 2015, people weren't doing those things.
Right. But Vikram, again, the problems you identified, the solutions they had, where was that coming from? Were there existing companies in your portfolio that saw these failure rates, you know, while transactions were going through? And again, how did you hear about Razorpay? There were two IIT Roorkee graduates sitting in Jaipur, and they were not pitching actively. How did you hear about them?
So yes, we were hearing about it across our portfolio. We had made a bunch of e-commerce investments, and we had also made an investment in Ola at that time. And so there was essentially a cash problem with e-commerce, that everything was happening on cash. And then when you asked why is it happening on cash to founders and to the ecosystem, it was essentially because for a user, you worked very hard to get this online user then, and there weren't that many. And then they are ready to purchase something, and then the payment fails. That's like the worst thing that can happen for the founder and the startup. So we were hearing that all the time. That convinced us that we needed to make an investment in the payment gateway space. So we were looking actively. And, you know, shout out to my partner, Rajat. He had actually gone and essentially landscaped the entire market. And we had made an investment, luckily, in a couple of IIT Roorkee founders in different startups. And they had mentioned that these guys are, you know, batchmates, juniors of us from IIT Roorkee. They have a pretty interesting reputation on campus as probably the
best.
Define
interesting reputation.
They had a reputation as the best hackers and engineers on campus.
Do you still and hack?
Not much anymore. But yeah, that in college, I used to hack a lot, and I had a infamous in college to do a lot of hacking in that. And to his point, I think I was very surprised when suddenly on LinkedIn I get a message from Matrix Partners India that hey, we want to speak to you. We had not even announced that we were in Y Combinator at that point. We just got selected, and we had not told anyone we were going to raise. We were building startup. We were two guys sitting out of my parents' home and building RazorPay. And suddenly some investor from Matrix Partners, which was one of the top investors at that point of time, messages us, and we were both like, how did they reach out to us? How did they get to know about us? So of course we took the call, and I mean, it was the most reputed VC firm at that point of time. So we had no reason to say no. We spoke to them. We said, hey, this is what we're thinking and so on. And that's how we started conversing with them. But I was very surprised when they pinged us out of the blue. No other investor knew about us.
Yeah. And after that, you know, once they were in Y Combinator, we thought they were actually giving us a hard time because they were not meeting us. But we just later, you know, as the friendship and the partnership grew, I just realized they were just incredibly busy at Y Combinator, and with the time zones and so on. We used to find these little windows in which we would catch up, but we could see they were on an incredible growth journey. If I just, you know, double click on this deck and, you know, what you saw, right? I think this deck is very simple, but it's incredibly clear, right? Because what you look for in one of these decks as an introduction, even before you meet founders and so on, is there is a pain point. And these guys had experienced that pain point personally because they were building lots of different things. And then there is a why now for why you can solve this problem now, which was there's mobile, which was a very clear why now, and this e-commerce was taking off, where there were these e-commerce companies who were willing to invest in this kind of partnership. And then there is usually a why us, right? And that, you know, we had to do a lot of diligence on, because that's missing in this deck.
But so how did you do the why us diligence? You spoke to their batchmates. You got to know that they were the best hackers on campus. What other ref checks did you do?
We did talk to some of their early customers. And it was clear that the things that they said in this deck, which is seamless onboarding, focus on failure rates, focus on mobile, even it was a two of you plus four interns. Yes. I forgot, four or five interns.
Four or five folks, yeah.
They had actually put together a product that customers would then talk about to other customers. So that those would be the two most important things, which is references on them as people. Then it's essentially the customer references. Third was also the windows that we got into their lives while they were going through Y Combinator. It was clear to us that every week the company was growing, but actually they were growing. And you can just see there are young founders who are like sponges, who just absorb stimulus that is being offered. And they were just growing so fast that we just wanted to be part of that growth journey.
Right. You know, Vikram, typically we see a lot of herd investing among VCs. So if six of your VC friends didn't look at RazorPay and you were the only one looking at it, what kind of conviction went behind it? Did you have a hard time convincing your investment committee at Matrix that, you know, hey, we should do this? Because they would have come back and said, but Vikram, you know, everyone has looked at it. They have rejected it. Why do you want to do it? Can't you invest in an existing payment gateway?
Thankfully, we don't follow an investment committee process. We follow a process where, you know, each individual can actually pursue something which they see. Because, you know, in venture, the best investments happen because somebody who's very close to a particular space is then pursuing something that is close to them. And they have a different point of view. That's usually the divergence is where the alpha happens, right? Where you can actually make great investments. So we actually follow that. But yes, I was a... we were all much younger then, and I'd like to believe we are still young. But so at that point of time, yes, I had to have this conversation. But for us, actually, what sealed the investment was the two of them, right? The founders and that conversation with founders. And the fact that we could just see that they had a very different point of view of solving this payment gateway problem, but also that they would just be tremendous founders along this journey, or the potential to be tremendous founders on this journey.
Right. When Harshal spoke about the deck, he said, you know, I'm embarrassed by it today, that it's not very fancy, and decks made by bankers were more fancy and had better design. What were you looking for?
Honestly, this deck came later. I think our conversation started first, and you know, I agree with what he said before, which is that the pitch or the conversation is more important than the pitch deck. But I do think when I look at pitch decks today, there is something about the personality behind the pitch deck which comes through in the pitch deck. And so you get a sense of what kind of conversation you're going to have. A lot of the times, you know, you'll see that there are nuggets of intellectual honesty where, you know, the biases are put in place and they are addressing the risks and questions. One of the best decks that I've seen is, these are the 10 reasons you should not invest. And because it was a very tough space, and these are the, and therefore this is how we are solving them. So it gives you a sense of the personality behind, where they are laying out the risks, they're laying out the biases, and then they are solving them. Often you'll see some decks are very product heavy, which means that these are product tech founders. Some decks will be very business model and operations heavy. So you'll get a sense that, hey, that's the way these guys are going to tailor that conversation. And that actually gives you some window on whether you want to pursue it, whether you want to pursue it very quickly, because that's the decision that you're making when a deck comes in.
So if I have to raise money from Vikram Vaidyanathan, should my deck be product tech focused heavy or business model operation?
Depends on the idea. If it for this, it had to be product tech because that was our thesis and that immediately spoke to me. But if it was, let's say right now, a lending company, an SME lending, that has to be risk first and maybe more financial services operations versus product tech. So it is tailor-made. So it gives you some sense of sort of horses for courses in terms of the opportunity and what kind of founder might do very well in that opportunity.
Right. Harshal, you know, if I look at this deck, the focus is so much on payments, right? But now when I look at Razorpay, you have Razorpay X and you have Razorpay Capital and so on and so forth. You also have a payment aggregator license. Did all that happen organically? Was it just a new opportunity that you saw every few years to expand your TAM, go deeper in a particular business?
Yeah. So I think one thing that we learned early on from our journey of building it, even from our fundraising journey, is that we need to keep talking to people who are using us, right? Like that is the people who are our customers, people who are using us. So I still speak to at least one customer a week. And that's been my mantra since early days, that I have to keep speaking to customers. So all the trajectory that Razorpay has had has been an outcome of those conversations. So we started with payments because that was the most common problem statement that we heard from founders, and we started building in that. And as well, keep meeting customers. One of the common things that I ask folks or founders or people that we're serving is that, hey, what are other problems that you have? What are other problems that you feel that Razorpay could solve for this? And you don't build everything that they ask for, but you keep finding those common tidbits in those. And that's how we expanded our vision. So we started with payments, and we would hear from founders that, hey, payments is good and you're solving it well. But once money comes to me, my downstream operations are still not digital because I'm still paying my employees, my vendors, my suppliers, all of that. And that's how the idea of Razorpay came in.
Then handle the payroll.
When we handle payroll, vendor payments, tax payments, and so on. The other problem we started hearing was, okay, the biggest issue for my growth is credit. How do I get access to lending? And that's how the idea of Razorpay Capital came in, that can we connect merchants and customers that we serve with creditors on our platform? And similarly, the next problem statement we went into is omnichannel. We started seeing this in COVID when most companies were going online. We actually went into offline. because we saw that a lot of customers who were offline first are now doing both online and offline together, and they wanted somebody to manage that. And that's how we took the direction of building omni-channel and raise up Omni through the acquisition and so on. So now we're building marketing stack because a lot of customers say, hey, if you have a lot of data about us, can you help us grow our business with that? And that's how the RazorPay Engage was born. So most of the expansion of RazorPay's vision has happened as a result of those conversations that I have with founders and customers that use us and try to find common pain points that they feel that we should be solving for them.
So what are your customers telling you now, this week, last week?
I think two big areas that we are focusing on now is beyond what we already have is cross-border, because that's one big area that we feel a lot of companies right now are trying to, even a lot of D2C brands are trying to go global and serve outside market, and they have a hard time accepting payments from foreign jurisdictions. So that's one area that we focused a lot on. And second is Engage, which is the marketing and loyalty stack. A lot of brands are now reaching at scale where they want to build loyalty platform for their customers. And how do they keep engaging with the same customers over and over again? So that's, those are the two areas that are fairly new for us and we're trying to go deeper in.
And sorry, you want to add?
I was just going to say, you know, one of the things I want to distill for founders watching is, you know, these two things that he just said, which is them being very outside in, where they are always immersing themselves in the customer's journey and then coming up with product tech solutions. It's been 10 years on this journey. Those two things have stayed exactly the same. And those are things that truly do sort of differentiate great founders who are just always talking to customers, customers, pain point, product. I think that is a huge learning that we've had in just the partnership with them.
Right. You mentioned cross-border, Harshal. So you have plans to kind of take this business global. Tell us about that. What can we expect?
Yeah, so we launched in Malaysia. We've launched in Singapore recently. We're looking at other markets in Southeast Asia. The challenge is payments is in every market you want to go into, we have to get a license. It's a long process. So, but the entire Southeast Asia, we feel, so whatever I wrote in this pitch deck 10 years back, now applies to Southeast Asia. So what, like if you look at the last slide of this pitch deck, it talks about that 500 million users are going to go online in India in next 10 years, which is what has happened, right, essentially. And online payments is an inflection point. There's a lot of the, what we need is a mobile first mindset, better technology, easy onboarding. So all of those things now apply to Southeast Asia as a whole. That online payments is an inflection point. It's going to go up rapidly. Large population is going to come online in the next 5-10 years. And there's an opportunity for somebody to use product and tech to bring that population online. So the same thing applies to a lot of markets outside India. And now with UPI, as a, because this was created at a point when UPI didn't exist, now looking at UPI's journey, it becomes even more clear that as the way UPI has changed India, real-time payments are going to change the rest of the world as well.
Right. You created this deck, you know, with US investors in mind, but now you're sort of doing a flip back to India. You're in the process of, you know, moving back your headquarters to India. Where are you on that journey? And is it a precursor to a listing on the Lal Street? What kind of timelines are you working with?
I think with 10 years back when we were raising money, that point of time, the majority of the funding pools lied outside India. And that's the reason we had to create a DEX and everything in a way, if you look at this, is trying to relate a lot of what we are doing to what happens in US and trying to explain that, hey, this is how you see it in the US, this is how it's happening in India. I think we're fortunate that India has seen that growth in last 10 years, where we are at a point where we're not as dependent on the US in terms of funding. And more importantly, in terms of large public IPO markets, in India has a large tech IPO market now. And from our perspective, we are very clear, we are an Indian company, we serve Indian customers, we have Indian employees, that everyone in India in some ways interacts with RazorPay a lot of times in their life. So it makes sense for us to list in India. And from that perspective, it makes sense for us to flip back to India. So we are almost completing that journey, the flip back. So in next, maybe it's hard to give timelines on this government process, but maybe next 1-3 months, we should be fully flipped back to India. And the idea for that is to list in Indian markets. Probably about 2-ish years before we go there. But we want to list in India. That's
the idea.
But you're
fully prepared for the tax outgo that this will.
Yeah, it's a significant tax, but it's the way I put it, it's a heavy cost, which is a small price to pay for being in India.
Right. Vikram, if you were to get a pitch deck today that wants to disrupt the payment gateway space, they believe that all the incumbents have too much legacy, they are coming up with a radically new offering, will you buy it?
Yes. So I think I've had this conversation. I've had this conversation. Of course, I've first taken blessings and permission, and then I'm making this. And they know that we are investing in some of these because Razorpay is essentially the index for overall digital payments in India. But then there are now vertical specific problems in a bunch of different areas, cross-border being one of them, where there could be very deep workflows. I think today what we would invest behind is likely companies which are going deep in business workflows in addition or actually not even focused as much on the payments problem, because some of the big horizontals will actually solve the payments problem as much and the underlying infrastructure is actually very robust. But for example, in education payments, there could be a vertical specific play. Healthcare payments, there could be vertical specific plays. There are many plays which essentially have deep e-commerce workflows, which could be sort of marketing workflows plus e-commerce workflows plus some checkout and so on. There is obviously this agentic trend line where you could actually have completely different agent-only interfaces. So there are different ways in doing this.
Great. On that note, thank you very much, Harshal and Vikram, for a very insightful conversation on Razorpay's maiden pitch deck. We have a copy of it here, but you can download this online on seedtoscale.com. Thank you very much for watching.